Do you want more true crime bedtime stories? Sign up to Bonus Bedtime Stories on Apple Podcasts today to access early and ad-free episodes. Subscribers will also get an exclusive bonus episode each month. But for now, get comfortable and enjoy tonight's episode.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome to True Crime Bedtime Stories. In today's episode, we're delving into the mid-1970s, an era shadowed by a fear that stalked the nighttime streets of Finland's serene capital. We'll cover the gripping and dark narrative of the serial events that have come to be known as the Helsinki cellar murders. Sit back, but don't get too comfortable, as we unravel a story where the spectral chill of the Cold War is outdone by the icy grip of a predator or predators lurking in Helsinki's very own backyard. The 1970s was rife with tension, an age marked by the thrumming anxiety of the Cold War. While superpowers played a high-stakes game of political chess, the rest of the world watched with bated breath. And behind this curtain of uncertainty, Finland found itself in a delicate position, geographically and politically. Nestled against the vast expanse of the Soviet Union, Finland walked a fine line, a tightrope between East and West. With every move scrutinized, the land of a thousand lakes had its neutrality tested time and again. The cold gaze of neighboring titans cast shadows upon the nation, shadows that crept into the lives of ordinary Finns. Yet it wasn't just the looming threat of superpower skirmishes that unsettled the Finns. It was something closer to home, something far more sinister that would strike fear in the heart of Helsinki. As the sun vanished beyond the horizon, casting long shadows across the snow-dusted streets of Helsinki, the city's inhabitants felt something more than the biting chill in the air. A disquieting energy wound its way through the cobblestone streets and well-trodden paths, a sinister undercurrent that whispered of danger lurking just out of sight. At corner cafes and in the humble warmth of their homes, people spoke in hushed tones about the darkness that had befallen their Nordic sanctuary. There was a frightful presence that loomed over Helsinki, leaving not a corner of light where one could find solace from the fear. No longer was it just the echo of Soviet tensions that caused unease. Now it was the thought of a predator walking among them, invisible and insidious, making victims of the innocent. In the late hours of the night, Helsinki's vibrant nightlife became a sinister masquerade where each shadow could conceal the city's most dreaded figure. Women, in particular, felt this change most acutely. The very act of walking alone morphed into a delicate balance between mundane routine and the palpable risk of being the next target. Nestled within the heart of Helsinki, there lies the unassuming neighborhood of Kapila, a place that blends the quiet residential pulse with a story of innovation in urban planning. Kapila was where the Garden City movement left a unique footprint during the 1920s, an attempt to harmonize urban living with the nurturing aspects of green spaces and quality housing. This visionary experiment sought to provide a solution to the workers' housing problems that plagued Helsinki at the time, yielding an area that valued both community and the environment. Decades passed, and by the 1970s, Kapolei had evolved. It still retained its original charm and greenery, but had grown to embody a working-class spirit with a sprinkle of professional residents, a testament to the neighborhood's appeal across different walks of life. It was within this diverse scene that Suzanne Helene Lindholm lived her day-to-day life. Born on the 8th of December 1950, Suzanne had her roots firmly planted in Kapolei. Her family's apartment was where she returned each night after her shifts at Helsinki Airport, a 13-minute drive from home. Her position at the airport was relatively new, a practical step she'd chosen to manage her student loans. Her heart, though, was set on the dream of becoming a physiotherapist. At just 25 years old, Suzanne's life was a canvas of aspirations and youthful determination, a desire to weave pleasure into the tapestry of ambition and hard work. The contours of her life in Kapolei bent, unexpectedly and tragically, one summer night in 1976. It was a Saturday evening, and the allure of Helsinki's vibrant nightlife beckoned. With none of her colleagues willing to join, she met her sister Camilla, and the two set off to paint the town, soaking in the celebrations, the revelry under the Nordic sky. They arrived at the Helsinki Club. The club was known for its music, the kind that gets under your skin and beckons you to the dance floor. And it was here, amid the ebb and flow of the night, that Suzanne encountered a Norwegian businessman. They struck a chord, talking and laughing. Suzanne's sister Camilla eventually decided to go home. Later on, as the night wore on and the hours whisked by, Suzanne and the man shifted their newfound companionship to the Hotel Hesperia. But what seemed like the beginning of a charming encounter slowly tiptoed towards its end as Suzanne exchanged numbers with the man, steadfastly refusing his company back to her home. 3 a.m., the night was deep, and the club's pulsating beats were now a distant echo. With no bus in sight and her funds not stretching to cover a taxi, Suzanne embarked on the 5-kilometer trek back to Kapolei. 10 minutes into her journey, she was seen by student-eyed witnesses who knew nothing of the creeping shadow tailing her to the Helsingin Katu, a street that would serve as the prologue to the final act of Suzanne Lindholm's life. From that moment on, the vibrant life of Suzanne became a haunting what-if. What transpired in the streets of Helsinki after was a deafening silence, an unsettling void filled only by a chilling trail of clues, each hauntingly incomplete. It's the stuff of restless nights and true crime lore, the last sighting of a young woman whose light was cruelly and abruptly extinguished in the shadows of her own city. The discovery of Suzanne Lindholm's body sent shockwaves through Helsinki, prompting an intense investigation by the city's police force. Set against the backdrop of an already anxious nation, the case was not just a tragic loss of life, but a stark violation of the community's sense of security. From the outset, investigators faced the daunting task of reconstructing Suzanne's last movements, knowing full well that the answers they sought might serve to prevent another such atrocity. Police scrambled to piece together the timeline of Suzanne's final hours, with her journey from the bar to her neighborhood marking the hour that would become the most baffling period of the investigation. They fervently surveyed the area, seeking out anyone who might have crossed paths with her, anyone who might have glimpsed a detail. No matter how insignificant it seemed, that could shed light on the mystery. The cellar, a space for mundane storage, transformed into the ghastly scene of Suzanne's murder, added layers of perplexity to the case. The fact that it was tucked away behind 3 locked doors implied a disturbing intimacy with the location. The killer either knew the area well, or, as fate would have it, had been granted access by Suzanne herself. Investigators pored over every detail. The brutal nature of Suzanne's injuries spoke volumes of the ferocity she encountered. Clues at the scene, including the presence of skin under her fingernails, indicated a desperate struggle for survival. Forensic teams worked diligently in hopes of finding traces to lead them to the assailant. Yet, despite the excessive violence, the perpetrator left behind frustratingly little in the way of forensic evidence, leaving the authorities grasping for leads. The neighborhoods of Helsinki were canvassed. Taxi drivers, regular clubgoers, and anyone who might have seen Suzanne or shared her route that night were questioned. The police knew the significance of establishing a connection, no matter how small, between Suzanne and her assailant. Neighbors, too, were put under the microscope, as the likelihood that the killer was someone local couldn't be overlooked. Suspects came and went from the police's line of inquiry, each time bringing a fresh wave of hope and disappointment. A nervous taxi driver drew their attention only to be ruled out swiftly. The Norwegian businessman who had spent time with Suzanne earlier in the night was interrogated, but his alibi stood firm. As leads dried up, frustration mounted. The case was going cold before their eyes, the elusive suspect fading into the annals of unsolved crimes. The Helsinki police's efforts were nothing if not exhaustive. Yet with every passing year, the hope of finding Suzanne's killer dimmed. As the case aged, so did the hope for new evidence, and the investigators faced the disheartening realization that they were chasing shadows. The truth was that amidst the countless hours of investigation and numerous leads, Suzanne's killer remained at large, a somber testament to the challenges they encountered.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
As we piece together the grim timeline of the Helsinki cellar murders, we can't help but wonder, was there a serial killer skulking in the shadows of this peaceful city? The unsolved case of Suzanne Lindholm might just be a fragment of a wider, more horrifying picture. In the aftermath of Suzanne's tragic murder, fear muddled the waters of Helsinki, but it also gave way to a troubling pattern that emerged with further appalling crimes, raising the specter of a prowling predator. In March of 1979, a missing persons case that still haunts Helsinki occurred when 28-year-old travel agent Helena Korlin disappeared without a trace in the Etu-Turlo district. Was it merely coincidence that she had connections to Suzanne Lindholm, or an eerie thread woven into this tapestry of terror? As the calendar pages turned without a sign of Helena, her life was reduced to a series of haunting last-seen impressions and a sister's heart-rending plea to authorities who seemed to swim against an undercurrent of confusion and dead ends. Then, on a cold December morning in 1980, on the very day when Finland celebrated its independence, the joy of the nation was marred by another ghastly discovery. Seija Tuliki Kekkonen, a 41-year-old mail carrier and mother, met a fate eerily similar to Suzanne's. Found lifeless in the basement of her own apartment building, Kekkonen's story added to the dark chapters of Helsinki's history. With no witnesses or leads, the beast, whether man or beastly coincidence, roamed free. But the shadow didn't lift. It merely grew darker. 2 months later, on January 30th of 1981, the community reeled yet again as 42-year-old Helka Onerva Katola's life was brutally extinguished. Her killer, emboldened or desperate, left combatant marks of violence, including stolen items, as though igniting a trail of breadcrumbs for a chase that would lead nowhere. These victims, plighted by their murderer's heinous acts, seemed to carve out a petrifying pattern in Helsinki's underbelly. Each snuffed-out candle left the city a little darker, a little colder, their ends coming after nights of seeking joy, only to be swallowed by ultimate despair. Were these the random articulations of different deviant minds, or the systematic horror of a single entity feeding off the city's innocence? Helsinki held its breath, not just for answers, but for a resolution that refused to come into the light. Chillingly, these cases seem to share threads that knit together into the possible fabric of a serial killer's grotesque masterpiece, with each horrifying act a stitch in a tapestry woven by a shadowy architect. The question that continues to echo through the corridors of time, was a serial killer at work in Helsinki? As we burrow deeper into the abyss of the Helsinki cellar murders, our flashlight lands on two men whose names are indelibly etched into the case files, Carl Erik Björkqvist and Jalo Seppänen. Both men have become infamous in the annals of Finnish crime, not just for their heinous actions, but for the shadow they cast over the unsolved murders. Let's start by peering into the life of Carl Erik Björkqvist, known notoriously as the Goat of Punavuori. His crimes are the stuff of nightmares. When 28-year-old travel agent Helena Corlin vanished in 1979, the trail of suspicion led straight to Björkqvist's doorstep. He was a lecherous figure with convictions for rape, and yet, with a high-standing family backing him, Björkqvist cast a long and oppressive shadow over the case. He had the modus operandi, the violent history, the rape of a 17-year-old in 1971, and a brutal attempted rape in 74 speak volumes of his capabilities. The question begged, could he be the same specter lurking behind the cellar murders? With Corlin's disappearance, Björkqvist admitted to crossing paths with her on the night she went missing, and yet no trace of her was found in his apartment. It was only when more blood surfaced in a car he'd sold that the dots began to congeal into a damning picture. Upon arrest, he confessed to killing Corlin, her dismembered body having been discarded at a landfill site. Björkqvist's stint in prison was punctuated by a disturbing adoration from a slew of women. Marriage proposals rained down, including from affluent admirers. The question loomed large in the investigation. If he could cold-bloodedly commit one murder, could he have been the fiend responsible for the cellar victims? Then there's Jalo Seppänen, a man who, like Björkqvist, leaves a bitter taste in the mouth of justice. Seppänen's profile painted the picture of a man hewn from the cruelest of impulses, a man whose rage against women was almost palpable. With a stained past of sex offenses and a track record of using strangulation during his attacks, Seppänen made no mystery of his contempt for women, beginning, allegedly, after the dissolution of his marriage, a union that crumbled around the same time as Suzanne Lindholm's murder. The devolution of Seppänen into a life marred by alcohol and drug abuse dovetailed the timeline of the cellar killings. His confession to the rape and murder of Helena Mentila was a grim revelation of his pent-up animosity. And yet, for all the pieces that fit, There were parts of the puzzle that never truly aligned with the Seller murders. His boxing history and physique mirrored that of the unknown assailant. And yes, the details of Mentila's death matched others, but without physical evidence to tether him to the other killings, Seppänen remains a specter of suspicion rather than a confirmed specter of death. The Helsinki police force found themselves wrestling with these two enigmatic figures, clawing at every semblance of truth they could unearth. Despite their best efforts, grappling with the tangled threads of possibility and awaiting concrete evidence, the connection between these two prime suspects and the Seller murders remained frustratingly out of reach. As the years have withered away, the chilling specter of these possibilities still haunts the corridors of unresolved criminal history. As we sift through the remnants of the Helsinki Seller murders, a veil of questions remains stubbornly draped over the events that transpired. Each unanswered query adds a weight to the city's collective heart, a tension that lingers like the harsh Finnish winters. The community, once host to these unspeakable acts, has been etched forever by the sharp claws of confusion and fear. What gnaws at the minds of Helsinki's residents and crime enthusiasts alike is the series of unknowns that cloak the case like a dense fog. How did the murderer know of the Seller's existence and Suzanne Lindholm's access to it? Was there a hidden connection between the assailant and the victims? Or were these crimes the work of a predator seizing random opportunities to strike? One cannot ignore the immense impact these cold cases have on a community. Families of the victims remain torn by the absence of closure, haunted by what-ifs and maybes. To live knowing that justice has slipped, like sand, through the fingers of the law can challenge one's faith in security and order. The Helsinki police, met with the daunting task of untangling this web of mysteries, faced obstacles that proved insurmountable. Witnesses' memories fade, evidence degrades, and leads that once burned hot turn cold. The passage of time, instead of offering healing, serves to harden the reality of these unresolved atrocities. And yet, hope is not entirely extinguished. Modern advancements in forensic sciences offer a glimmer of possibility, the prospect that these cold cases may one day find their warmth in the light of truth. But until that day, if it ever comes, the enduring mystery of the Helsinki Seller murders continues to loom over the city, a sobering reminder of our perpetual quest for resolution and the elusive nature of truth. As the shadows of our tale recede, we're left to reflect on the stark tragedy that these Seller murders have etched into the heart of Helsinki. The untimely ends met by Suzanne Lindholm, Seija Tulikki Kekkonen, Helka Onerva Kitola, and Helena Mantila echo through the decades, a chorus of women whose stories were cut tragically short. Each victim, a daughter, a sister, a friend. Their deaths not just a loss to their loved ones, but to the city itself. These unsolved chapters hold back a sense of closure, hinder resolution, and remind us of the fragile nature of our own safety. They urge us to remember, to stay vigilant, and to continue to seek justice no matter how many years may pass. For more about this and all of our episodes, check out our True Crime Bedtime Stories Instagram and TikTok accounts. Join us next time for True Crime Bedtime Stories. Until then, sleep tight.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both as twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in...
opinions.
We do that in every episode, too.
We're professional unprofessional, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.